The EPA has a policy of making sure its regulatory actions take into account what the agency calls environmental justice. It's providing its analysts with detailed technical guidance to make sure work is consistent across the agency. Joining me with what this all means and for how the mission is carried out, Kelly McGuire, an economist in EPA's Office of Policy, and Charles Lee, EPA's Deputy Associate Assistant Administrator for Environmental Justice. Good to have you both on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charles, if you would, let's start with you by asking what exactly is environmental justice in the first place?
Thank you. EPA defines environmental justice as the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of race, color, national origin, or income with respect to development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. That means that is our goal, that all communities and persons across the country have access to the decision-making process and the same degree of protection from environmental and health hazards.
Now, these things are published often, you know, before rules become final, they're out there. How does environmental injustice come into the system in the first place, do you think?
There's a lot of reasons for that, and there are many factors that lead to that. The main thing is that we have found that communities, particularly communities of color or low-income communities, are affected, have greater are affected in ways which make them more vulnerable to environmental hazards, and these are due to either environmental reasons or because of their socioeconomics.
And Kelly, as an economist, what does your role bring to this new technical guidance that EPA is giving to its regulatory analysts?
Sure, that's a great question. What this guidance does is it provides our analysts, which could include risk assessors, economists, other experts within the agency, with information on how to consider environmental justice in the regulatory process. It's not a cookbook per se, but rather it provides a set of best practices, analytical principles, definitions, methods, and tools that analysts can use in the regulatory process when they're doing their analytical work, so that they can think about potential environmental considerations and do so in a consistent practice and in a consistent and rigorous way that keeps in line with state-of-the-art practices, so that we're identifying potential environmental justice concerns early and consistently in the process.
I mean, a way to boil this down, would it be safe to say that suppose you're in a neighborhood that is, you know, maybe has a large number of minority individuals, maybe they don't have access to the technology tools that other people do, and they're right next to a regulated facility. Is the idea here to make sure that they understand what the rulemaking process is doing and how they can participate, since they have a direct stake in what that facility might be doing to the air or water right next to them?
Sure. Well, there are two things that are going on. One is making sure that people have the information that they need and access to the process so that they can either weigh in or just be informed about what's going on. And that is really the topic of the first guidance that EPA issued, the guidance on considering environmental justice during the development of an action, which tells analysts when to consider environmental justice, and that'll include a lot of public outreach components. But the second part is for the analysts to provide information to the decision maker on who is affected by our regulations. And so that's giving us ourselves an understanding of where those facilities are located and what the characteristics are of the population that surrounds those facilities, so that we know if there are potentially vulnerable or sensitive populations that may need extra consideration when we're making our decisions about a particular rule.
And so, Charles, how might this play out in a practical sense? Suppose I'm in the Division of Water, and I am thinking about a rule affecting water. What would I need to do differently now as a result of this guidance that would make sure that this idea of environmental justice is considered in my activities?
Well, what that means is that when the analyst begins to assess the impacts of a particular rule on that population, We will know a lot more, but we have to take into consideration the kinds of backgrounds, the kinds of particular vulnerabilities, and ways in which the rules may affect that population differently.
We're speaking with Charles Lee, EPA's Deputy Associate Assistant Administrator for Environmental Justice, and Kelly McGuire, an economist in EPA's Office of Policy. And is there sources of information, demographic data, for example, that might come from another federal agency that analysts should now access to make sure that environmental justice comes into their rulemaking?
Sure. Yes. A great source of information that we use regularly and talk about in this guidance is from the Census Bureau, which provides our most comprehensive source of information on a whole host of characteristics about the population, including race, ethnicity, income, and other potentially confounding variables or factors that we should consider, like age or education or linguistic isolation. So that's the primary source of the socioeconomic information. Information on risks and other characteristics are going to vary according to the particular context. So, for instance, if there's a rule about air pollution that we're considering, we'll have certain data sources that we'll use in that context, which will differ from, of course, if we're talking about a water pollutant.
And so, Charles, how long has this guidance been out, and what kind of training, I guess, or how are you making sure this gets promulgated and all the analysts really start to inculcate it in what they're doing?
Well, let me back up a little bit and say that this is one of a number of activities that EPA has undertaken to integrate environmental justice in EPA's programs. This particular guidance, as Kelly and I have said, is the second of guidance on rulemaking. This is a more analytical one, but we have done training throughout the process in the course of both of these guidance, and this is part of a larger set of activities as part of EPA's strategic plan on environmental justice, which in the past 4 years has been planned EJ 2014.
Do you have any examples of where a rule might have been better written or better implemented had these kinds of considerations been paramount or brought into the first place?
Well, actually, in the EJ technical guidance, there are 11 examples of how EPA has considered environmental justice in the analysis. One of those is the definition of solid waste rule, which look at the characteristics of communities surrounding facilities that handle hazardous secondary materials, and use that information to help strengthen the requirements for handling, for notification, and for record keeping.
And many agencies do rulemaking, as a matter of course, in many different industries. How can this, do you think, apply maybe in other federal agencies?
Sure. So the audience for this particular guidance was, of course, the EPA analysts, but we certainly would find that this may be useful for any agency that's considering how to incorporate the consideration of environmental justice into their federal activities. We pay attention to what other agencies are doing when they release guidance, as we can learn from each other, both in terms of the methodology that can be applied, but as well the data sources. And I would expect that other federal agencies might find this of interest as well.
I mean, can it go beyond maybe just environmental justice to other forms of justice where effects may be different on people depending on their socioeconomic status?
Sure. So there are certainly many unique and complex characteristics associated with the issue of environmental justice, which has a long and deep history within this country. But one could imagine that there may be other potential groups for which we want to give special consideration. And we do at the agency and have specific guidance written in those contexts. For instance, when we're talking about children, we have children's health protection guidance, which we use in our analysis. And you could extend this to other scenarios as well.
And what about the regulated entities? Is there any way that they can participate in the process to make sure that there's justice in what ends up as a rule? Charles?
Well, you know, first let me clarify that the EJ technical guidance is directed at how EPA does its own business in terms of conducting better analysis. So there's no direct costs or paperwork requirements for others, such as business or individuals or companies. But so that, I think, is an important thing to clarify. You know, having business or regulated entities become part of the process is also very important. It's one of those things that we have emphasized as an important part of how EPA conducts its activities around environmental justice.
Charles Lee is EPA's Deputy Associate Assistant Administrator for Environmental Justice, and Kelly McGuire is an economist at EPA's Office of Policy. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.